The best insight, instant feedback, accountability. The all-new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5.
We step into the Lunchtime Doctor with Dr. Brittany Dean as we start our session here today. It was a little conversation going on. So welcome to the our doctor. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. You know, it's great to be here again. Yeah, I was expecting Davey. He's talking whole week that he's going to be here for the entire week.
Uh-oh.
But as soon as I mentioned Women's Wednesday yesterday,
he ducks out. Poor boy.
Yeah. So, no. Oh, it's Bass. Bass is here.
No, it's Davey actually coming. I just came to tell you congratulations.
Oh, thank you.
Wait, where are you going?
Davey.
Oh, Davey is coming. Yeah. Okay, so.
He's running away from Women's Wednesday too.
So how are you? Okay, so Women's Wednesday, what are we talking about today?
So last week we were supposed to be talking about autoimmune diseases in women and how it affects women, because we tend to see a lot of autoimmune diseases affecting women more than men. But we did get a little sidetracked because they had a lot of different things going on last week, which is great. They had a lot of different events. I think you went to one, the Energy...
Energy Conference?
Yes, the Energy Conference. So we had a little sidetrack with that. So we're back to the autoimmune diseases in women today. Of course, I still want to encourage the listeners to call in. Even if you have other questions, it does not have to be about the topic. We do answer all the questions here. And just call in, send your WhatsApp, send your messages, and we will be happy to answer them here on the Lunchtime Doctor.
And the numbers are 627-3223, 625-2257, and 306-1065.
Yes. So today we're going to talk about autoimmune diseases, like I said. Now, when we're talking about autoimmune diseases, I just want people to understand what the normal immune system does and how it works. So in an average person, in a person who does not have an autoimmune disease, the normal system works like this. A bacteria, any type of pathogen or foreign substance, such as a parasite or virus, comes into the body. Our body recognizes that this is foreign. And in recognizing this, it tends to create messages to other cells in the immune system to say, attack this, this is not good, this is going to be dangerous for us. However, in people with autoimmune diseases, what tends to happen is that the body does not recognize the body itself. So it thinks that the body itself is something foreign and starts to attack its own immune system. And unfortunately, for persons who are diagnosed with autoimmune diseases, our own body tends to attack itself, and therefore the immune system is going to be sort of compromised or is not going to work as adequately as it should. So why I'm talking about autoimmune diseases on Women's Wednesday is that women tend to be more susceptible to autoimmune diseases. And before we go into what... why women are more susceptible, because, you know, this is ongoing research as usual. I just want to talk about what are the different types of autoimmune diseases, because there are over 80 types of autoimmune diseases, but there are more common ones that we do see here. And Davey just walked in.
That's a walk-in, that's a burst-in. Enjoy the rest of your day, TNT.
Oh, gosh.
Bye-bye.
Okay, bye. Davey is here, and so of course,
good afternoon,
Davey.
All right, how are you?
I'm doing great.
Much love and thanks going out to Tusker for holding down the last 3 and 10 minutes.
Yes,
make it sound like
it's
our whole shift, right?
So she had to be here first. She had to hold down the phone.
Tusker, again, we were talking lady parts today.
No, we're not talking lady parts.
Oh, so sorry.
You see what I mean?
I apologize. I just had to make sure, you know, I mean, we're talking autoimmune.
Yes, we're talking autoimmune disease.
With ladies.
In women. In everybody. It's more susceptible in women. So that's why we're talking about it today.
We're not talking lady parts, just making sure. Bye, Tusker.
Bye, Tusker.
All right, so we are in with the Lunchtime Doctor this afternoon.
Yes.
And of course, yeah. Whew, thank you guys. I finally made it Couldn't miss this one for the world. So good afternoon. Remember those numbers are 627-3223 and 625-2257. Feel free to message us any questions as it relates to autoimmune diseases or any questions that you may have, anything you want to ask Dr. Taylor, Dr. Brittany Dean. So, hi, yes. How are you?
Hi, I'm doing good. I'm doing great.
I would imagine you come prepared.
Yes. All right. Yes, I did. So we were talking about autoimmune diseases, and let me just reiterate because you stepped in a little late, but that's okay.
Before you go, I was at the government plaza for the launch of HDC's app to pay your rent and your mortgages.
Yeah.
And I spoke with the minister, and then I had to leave the government plaza there at 5 to 12. So walk all the way across because driving doesn't make sense. No. It's right Port of Spain.
Yeah.
And then I still managed to get here within 10, 15 minutes.
So oh, that's
I
very well. Good. Yes, you did. You did
and
very
the sun
well.
Is...
Hot. It's hot.
Scorcher.
Outside, it's very, very hot. I understand that. So, yeah, we're talking autoimmune today. And basically, we are just going to reiterate that the body's immune system in an average person tends to fight off any type of foreign pathogen. So bacteria, parasites, viruses, anything that comes into our body that the body's not used to, a normal immune system just fights it off. And people with autoimmune diseases, their immune system starts to attack themselves because they see themselves as a foreign object.
That's a good point. When you talk about autoimmune, I wanted to ask the question yesterday, what is autoimmune disease?
So basically what I was explaining, so it occurs when the immune system mistakenly attacks the healthy cells and the tissues in the body. And this will then lead to inflammation and damage to the tissues, to the organs, to any part that is being affected. So unlike the other medical conditions where the body is usually attacked by external forces, like I said before, bacteria, viruses, other pathogens, the autoimmune diseases involve the body sort of turning on itself and the immune system starting to attack itself. So people with autoimmune diseases, they are going to need medication that suppresses their immune systems. And this is where certain things become important, like not getting sick or not getting any type of external factors coming into your space, because you are suppressing your immune system and therefore it is not able to fight off any external factors.
Repeat that. If you're suffering from autoimmune, you're not supposed to get sick.
So
you can't afford to get sick
because your immune system is being suppressed because of the medication that you will be taking. So usually the medications would span from things like steroids, low dose to high dose steroids to suppress the immune system. Because remember, your immune system is attacking your body itself. So in order to treat that, we have to suppress the immune system. We have to basically make it lay low for a little while so that it does not flare up and start to attack different organs, different tissues. And unfortunately, autoimmune diseases can be genetic. Some people can just be more susceptible to getting autoimmune diseases. Some people can develop it. So what we do see is that women in their menopause years, when estrogen levels drop, you know, they are more susceptible to developing autoimmune diseases because of this hormonal change. And we always say that women go through so many hormonal changes in their life.
Trust me.
Yeah, so we go through puberty, pregnancy, menstruation,
just general madness.
I mean, it's we can say it's the hormones, okay? We can say it's the hormones.
I know, only have a real good excuse, you know, to blame one thing, you know. You know, but I don't envy you all at all. I reverence.
Let me tell you, before we hit menopause, that estrogen is protective, that protects us from heart disease, that protects us from a host of different cancers, etc. But you see, after menopause, our risk for heart disease or our risk for heart attacks actually becomes equal to that of men because we no longer have that estrogen. That estrogen has dropped. So the risk for heart attacks between men and women actually become the same at that point. But before that, you know, we're protected. We're protected by the estrogen.
So is it that women are less susceptible to getting a heart attack
because
in their earlier years?
In their earlier years because
really?
Of that protective estrogen, yes. That is the truth.
Wow, that is a revelation.
You didn't know that? No. Oh, sorry. You have not been here for a little while on the lunchtime, doctor.
I know, right? Management. I know only doing upstairs, but you know, I need to come here a little more. You know, as you mentioned that, I would have lost three friends, three neighbors within the last 2 months. The most recent died on Saturday morning at 5:30.
Wow.
And when we checked out, like, I just missed the guy. And Saturday when I was finding out about the third one that passed away, I found out about the other two. So like this guy in the area that where I live, he does carpentry work very, very good. So he repairs cupboards, chairs, anything. He was an ace in that area. So I keep thinking, you know, I had to carry this chair. I one of my favorite chairs. I go in my this one. So I was just making a joke. I have to go by him. And then he's watching me like, you don't know he died? And then when I ask around, you know, how these men died, heart.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And just gone.
Yeah.
I'm thinking.
So it's so common. Heart attacks is so common because we have a predisposition here in Trinidad for especially the risk factors. Mm-hmm. You will see that a lot of people have the risk factors for a heart attack, which would be something like diabetes, high blood pressure, smoking. You see, smoking, that is one of the biggest risk factors.
For heart attack?
For a heart... Yeah, what? Yes!
Wait. You know, you really live and learn. Mm-hmm. I mean, my dad was a smoker.
Yes.
And funny thing is, he didn't get lung cancer.
No.
He had prostate cancer.
Oh,
so
yes.
It's like when they did the checks, the cancer ate from down coming up rather than up going down.
Yes. So what tends to happen is that when prostate cancer spreads, it starts to go to the lower back first.
Yes.
And that's why they get back pain. So we always say men over the age of 65 with lower back pain, they definitely need to go and get themselves checked out because it turns out to be a red flag, per se. Because
if you have back pain like me, like right now, I am a 40. I don't worry.
Well, if you have a family history, you need to go and get yourself checked.
And you can check it in the blood, right? It don't have to
you
be
can,
evasive.
Yeah, yes, you can check
so
it in the blood.
So the intrusive way?
You don't have to do the intrusive way because there are studies that are coming out that said it is so... it's subjective because one doctor can feel something, another doctor may not feel something. So usually the blood test is.
There was a narrative, and I'm trying to spiral out of control from the conversation.
Yeah.
But it will be remiss of me if I don't ask, you know. I was told that by the time they pick it up in your blood test, it would have meant that your cancer would have developed.
Not necessarily.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, it really depends on what is going on in the prostate itself. So once they pick it up in the blood test, then we go to a different level of tests. Is it a biopsy? Is it a radiological investigation? More than likely, it will be a biopsy. And they do several different biopsies as well, just to ensure. Once it is there, there are several modalities of treatment that can be done, depending on the stage. Now, if you are at, say, a stage 4 where it has metastasized, and when I say metastasized, I mean it has spread to different areas of the body, then it becomes a case where, okay, we can make it, it becomes a case where it is palliative, making you comfortable at that stage, because you can't take out several different organs in your body, you would not be able to live. But if it is confined to the prostate or confined to a region over there, then there are treatments that can be used. You know, we have the different radiological treatments. We have radioisotopes that are inserted into the prostate as well to beam radiation into the prostate to kill the cancer cells. There are so many different things you can take out of the prostate.
So, if it take out a man's prostate,
Yes.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
You're not asking, right?
Yes.
All right. So better be taken out early then. So
No. So when I'm talking about prostates, for example, you understand when women have breast cancer, if you have a family history of breast cancer, it depends on, is there a gene that you have that you share with your mother? If there's a particular gene, then it is better to remove the breasts. If there's the particular gene, we call that the BRCA gene, then it is better to remove the breast. But if there's no gene that is attached to you or your mother, but they just have a family history, you're not going to undergo surgery just to take off your breast. Because what tends to happen is that surgery comes with its own risks. So putting yourself at risk
unless there's a reason to do so.
Yeah.
One texter is saying to me, good afternoon, how can a blood test prove a swollen prostate? Now, I don't want to digress, so we could probably ask that question
So
let's texter, we appreciate your text message, but we really need to discuss the autoimmune as it relates to women and how it affects women, all right?
Right.
And men by extension.
Yes. So, I mean, when we're talking about autoimmune diseases, I don't know if many listeners will be familiar with the term autoimmune diseases. They may actually be familiar with the diseases themselves. So things like rheumatoid arthritis. Have you ever heard about this?
I recently heard about it.
Yes.
But what is it actually?
So basically, rheumatoid arthritis, it's a type of arthritis that is inflammatory. So you will have inflammation of the joints. You will have people having certain factors within their blood. You have the rheumatoid factors, and that's why we test the blood for certain autoimmune conditions, because you will have it will show up in the blood.
So rheumatoid arthritis is an autoimmune disease.
It's an autoimmune disease because you have the rheumatoid factors, meaning that there are things in the blood or antibodies in the blood that tend to attack our joints. And these things can become dangerous. It can become detrimental for certain people. So, you know, we tend to want to pick this up very early. And we do pick it up in most people because they do come with a complication, you know, swollen fingers, swollen joints. They're getting inflammation in the knees, in any of the joints, really and truly. And when you test the blood, you see the rheumatoid factor in it. And there are other antibodies. I'm just saying rheumatoid factor because, you know, rheumatoid arthritis, people will be able to associate that easier. But there are other antibodies that we do test for, just not to make it complicated.
Understand.
Other diseases would be things like lupus. Lupus is an, yes, it's an autoimmune disease as well. Multiple sclerosis, which a lot of people may not be familiar with, but we do see it in the hospital sometimes. Thyroid diseases, there are certain thyroid diseases that are also autoimmune. So we have antibodies that attack the thyroid itself, and people will tend to get symptoms of hypothyroidism, meaning they have low thyroid hormones. So they will tend to put on a lot of weight, they will tend to feel cold a little more, they tend to get so many different symptoms when it comes to these things. And one other autoimmune disease that we did speak about yesterday that people should be familiar with is type 1 diabetes. That is an autoimmune disease. It attacks the pancreatic cells and you're no longer making insulin. So that's why I said you usually pick that up at a younger age because the cells are being attacked from a younger age. And while I'm listing all these diseases and I'm giving a small synopsis of each one is so complex. And that's why I wanted to talk about autoimmune diseases in general because each one has, it's so complex. Each one has its own day to recognize it and to be aware of it. So if we are talking about autoimmune diseases, this can span over a year. I kid you not. Autoimmune diseases vary in symptoms and they vary in different types. There are over 80 types of autoimmune diseases. And we are developing in the science now so that we are able to detect it better and we are able to manage it easier. But people with autoimmune diseases, and if any of the listeners out there do have an autoimmune disease and they are diagnosed, and they will know, they will understand how the complications are so detrimental and can be so severe. And that is why taking care and making sure that the medication that you are taking is on par every single day. So like we were talking about type 1 diabetes yesterday, if you miss your insulin, you can end up in a coma just like that, you know?
Do people wake up from comas?
They can, yes. People can wake up from comas.
Being in a coma means you're brain dead?
Not necessarily. So we will do a certain test called an EEG, or we will look at brain activity. So once there's brain activity, that does not necessarily mean that you are brain dead. So being in a coma really just means that the body is not responding as it should. Yes, and your brain is not being connected to your body as it should be. So you are not aware of your surroundings. You're not aware of anything that is going on. But once the brain can be stimulated properly, then people do wake up from comas. You do see it. And I know that there are miracle stories out there, people waking up years after.
I was not going to ask you that, you know, how long, you know, could somebody survive being in a comatose state?
That depends on the treatment that they are getting in that comatose state. Because remember, they are going to be, they're going to need to be supplemented every single day because they can't eat for themselves, they can't drink for themselves. And some of them, they can't even breathe for themselves because they will, their brain is not functioning to get into their lungs. So they will not be able to breathe for themselves. So in certain states like that, when you see a patient in an ICU in that type of state, you know, you have to really ask yourself, is it better for them to live this way and hope that there's a miracle or hope that something does happen, or are they just suffering in that state as well?
So in that state, being in a coma, and you're looking at your relative, if they, no, the life support machine that helps them to breathe, or the machine that the breathing machines that help them, is that considered life support? Is a life support machine and a breathing machine the same thing?
So it is essentially somewhat of the same thing because, you know, during surgery, we do have machines that help you breathe as well. But when you get to the ICU in a state that is what we call comatose, there are machines that are a little more complicated to allow you to breathe, allow you to be fed, because you can't feed for yourself. So you have to be fed by either nurses, you know, parental treatment, all these different things through a CVP line. And there are so many factors that you have to take into consideration. It gets very complex.
I could imagine.
Yeah.
So sometimes you're looking at them and, you've heard of these, you know, stories where people wake up 20 years later and all of that kind of thing.
Yeah, so when...
How possible is that? And when you wake up them times? Let's say...
All right. I don't know how feasible, honestly, from my professional opinion. I'm thinking when people do go into a coma, because I have never seen that
in your medical history.
In my medical history, I've never seen somebody really wake up
from a coma. Really?
Yeah.
So once you, from your perceptive in terms of your experience in the medical fraternity.
No, I have not seen.
Once they reach in that coma state.
Yes, it is. It's a state, and usually the patients that we do see getting to that coma state, we do expect because of their medical history that they may not make it. Their organs have been shutting down for a while, so it's not feasible for them to make it at that point. Your kidneys are not functioning, your liver is not functioning, these things are not functioning anymore.
So then they're in your body and they're dead?
But, yeah.
So you in a coma, you're still alive, you have brain activity,
yes.
So you're not brain dead.
But then some of them just end up dying like a day or two after. So I have seen patients go from sitting down one day to basically being bedridden and then I've seen that happen in a span of 3 days. I would be talking to a patient one day, and because of the disease, the type of the disease that they have, it really is dependent on whether the cause is reversible or not as well. But if there's a reversible cause of a disease, if it has progressed to a state where it becomes irreversible, then there's not much that we can do, you know? And this is a good point to bring up as well, because a lot of patients that we do see come at the end stages or the complicated stages of their disease. The stages where not a lot can be done from our perspective. And I don't want to say anything.
No,
we
facts.
Get
the, you know me.
We get the saying that the hospital has killed this person or the doctor has killed this person, when in fact the person has come at a point in their disease where there's not much that we can do except make you comfortable, you know?
And I like that terminology you use. I noticed you used it earlier. You said make you comfortable.
Yes.
So if you're having pains,
yes,
we try
definitely.
To give you some morphine.
Medication, yeah, yes. So there's certain medications. And we do reserve especially the high-level medication, pain medications, for hospital use, because that comes with its own risks versus benefits at that point. But it all boils down to the decisions that the patient makes, because we do also have patients coming into the hospital mm-hmm. and wanting to leave because they don't like this treatment, or they don't want their toe cut off, or they don't want their foot cut off. But at that point, there's not much we can do to salvage your toe or salvage the foot.
So if they go by a private institute, they will tell them,
or you just need antibiotics. But it's progressed to the point where this will spread straight up your leg, and then you will lose the leg instead. But some patients don't want to hear that. They are in denial, and the only thing that we can do is give them time. But
the time is limited.
Yes, we do know the time. Yeah. So that is why there are documents that say that you're going against the medical advice of the doctor. So if you sign that, it's on you. Responsibility at that point. And patients do sign it. It is very sad to see, especially when you know that this is the right treatment for them. But people tend to listen to family members or friends.
But what if they leave? Pastors mm-hmm. or bush doctors.
Yes.
You have a cough, go and pick this grass, put this flower in here, mm-hmm. swizzle it twice, and drink that. And the thing about it is, that is such bad advice. And I'll tell you why. What might work for you may mm-hmm. not work for me. My body masses. So you might tell me, take two doses of this. Mm-hmm. But then I'm smaller than you. Your body mass is big. I just probably need one.
Yeah.
You know, or maybe two teaspoons, and you take a whole tablespoon, yes. You know. So people like to pass on remedies to individuals.
Yes. And especially for children as well. I will say this. When we are giving medication to children, it is always based on their weight. Oh. It is always based on their weight to find out the dosage to give them. Babies, toddlers, up to a certain age. I mean, adults, we take an average of what the average weight would be for an adult. But like you were saying, most people would be bigger than me. So the dose for most people, I will have to take one. Even when we're talking about small, insignificant things like probably multivitamins. Mm-hmm. I know if I take the actual dose of a multivitamin, which would be 2, I will feel upset. I will feel queasy because it is too much for my body. It's too much vitamins in one.
Wow.
So it is imperative that anything that you're taking, especially prescription-wise, mm-hmm. that you need to go to your doctor and say, okay, well, yes, this is the actual dose, but I feel this type of effect on it. And it's either they will lower the dose or they will give you something to combat that effect. You can't just go diagnosing yourself. You can't just go diagnosing your child, right? And this is a point I want to make. And Michael said this, and it did stick with me.
It resonated with you. Yes.
Mm-hmm. He said that when something happens to your car or your fridge, you go by the person that is able to treat
I just say that all the time. Just last week, Saturday, I host a wedding, right? And here I ask the audience, now, Gayla, go and tell me before you say your next piece. I said to the audience, I said, listen, you know, when you have an electrical problem, do you call the plumber? So a tile raised up in your house, are you going to call a carpenter? Or are you going to call a mason? Mm-hmm. So why, for the love of God, you're having a marital problem, but you're calling your single friends?
Exactly.
I don't get it.
Exactly.
So it's the same thing.
It's like you need to value your body the way you value your car or your house or your fridge or anything like that. You need to value your body the same way. So you need to give your body the same type of respect that you would give your car. You're going to a mechanic, just go to the doctor.
Same thing, you know. Let me just pause it there very quickly. I mean, we got to give people some information here where they can lean into a healthier life with GNC Total Lean, where actual science meets tasty flavors to make your wellness journey fun, delicious, and way more convenient. GNC Total Lean is a complete brand of weight management supplements, Total Lean, meal replacements, and snacks. Not only can high-quality products help you on your weight management journey, but they are also great solutions for living an overall healthier lifestyle. Available at GNC stores, supermarkets, and pharmacies nationwide. Visit at GNCTT on Instagram for more information. Remember, GNC, live well. We take a break and come back. Stick and stay.
Your eyesight is everything. Let the experts at Dalton Brown Optometrists take care of it for you. They are the highest quality technology to provide a range of eye exams such as pathology screening, visual field testing, glaucoma screening, and much more. Just ask. They'll also provide a range of stylish and practical spectacles, frames, and sunglasses for all ages, and soft contact lenses, colored contact lenses, and hard contacts, all to meet your needs. Contact Dalton Brown Optometrist today at 667-3115 for your consultation. Visit them on social media at Dalton Brown Optometrist and check out their locations at the corner of Queen and Sojano Street, Arima.
Engage with Davey on the all-new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5.
And of course, good afternoon. Welcome back. 24 minutes on the upswing to the hour of 1 o'clock. We are chatting with Dr. Brittany Dean. We're inside the Lunchtime Doctor here on the TBC Radio Network. And, you know, we was dealing with the autoimmune diseases and some of the comas. Now, somebody did message us a question here. Mm-hmm. Is an ESR test good for checking inflammation in the body?
Yes.
My reading is 27 on the test report.
So an ESR is the erythrocyte sedimentation rate, mm-hmm. right? And that is just a big fancy term. And yes, we do use it to check for inflammation in the body along with other parameters. So if we're thinking a bacterial infection or any type of infection, we also check the white blood cell count. If that is elevated, then we say, okay, yes, you do have an infection. Mm-hmm. ESR, we do check that in terms of autoimmune diseases as well. Mm-hmm. Now, the normal rate for an ESR, I would say, is up to 20, right?
This one is 27.
So it is high. It is definitely high. So what I would suggest is that I'm not too sure why they did the ESR. I'm not too sure what the history is. Mm-hmm. But you definitely do need to go back to your doctor and let them assess you in terms of your blood panel as well as your medical history, so they could put two and two together to give you the proper management. I don't know the context. They just give me a result.
Of course, 3061065 is your WhatsApp number to text any questions. And to my other sister stations, if you have any questions there as well, please feel free to forward it and we'll ask the good doctor. Now, we were talking about patients who would walk out of the hospitals,
yes,
sign a document meaning that you are going against.
So we call that a DAMA form.
But then let me ask you.
Yeah.
When they go to the private institution, they go wherever they go.
Mm-hmm.
Wouldn't the private institution say the same thing? Listen, you are in some problems here, and you need
So there are some patients who do like a second opinion, which is fine. That is completely okay for you to get a second opinion in certain conditions. If it is an emergency condition, no, there are certain things that need to be treated one time because this is life or death, right?
Okay.
Sometimes people just discharge themselves to go home. And in terms of the hospital, yes, it's understandable at some points that patients do want to go home because it is a long waiting time at some in certain instances. But what I also don't think people realize is that the doctors are not just, you know, leaving you there. There's a whole ward that we see, or there's a whole hospital that we see as well. Mm-hmm. And other than that, we have something called a triage system, meaning that the people who are most important, the people who are in a life or death situation, they get seen about first.
Agreed.
And sometimes that spans hours, especially if that person needs surgery, especially if they've come for a surgical issue, or especially if they come for a medical history issue like a heart attack. It can span for a great length of time. So that it's not that we're leaving you there. It's that there's something that has
Your attention at that moment.
Yes.
So then could we conclude that is a shortage? Because we need more. I am thinking, you know, I just tell people, listen, you see the hospital? While you might want to run there because you just sneezed. Mm-hmm. You know, you just had a sneeze and achoo, and you, oh
no,
my gosh.
Right.
Go so there go when it's absolutely necessary.
Only when it is completely necessary. Nobody is trying to turn you away if you've gotten a little cut on your foot or anything like that. But A minor cut versus somebody's leg being severed off, that is two completely
different, chalk and cheese.
Yes.
Yeah.
That is two completely different parameters. And you need to understand that, yes, we are dealing with the severed leg right now. But while we're dealing with that, a heart attack came in. And while we're dealing with the heart attack, an acute abdomen came in.
Mm.
So there are things that will keep coming that will take precedence.
So you sit down there for 8 hours
yes.
to get mm-hmm. some stitches and you're in some problems.
Yes.
Well, that is totally understandable. I'm very, very happy that, you know, in the Lunchtime Doctor segment, you can bring some light to that, because I often wonder.
Yeah.
I mean, I was there some years ago with my brother-in-law and my sister. You know, her husband took in, and we took him to the hospital. He has diabetes, mm-hmm. and we took him in. And I was like, listen, I walk with my tablet, my Netflix, my Max, mm-hmm. and my internet. I good. And I rode back in my vehicle for about a good 7 hours.
Yeah.
I got there like about 7 the evening. Mm-hmm. I never left until about probably 2, 3 the next morning.
Yes.
8, 3 o'clock in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking, wow. And my sister is quarreling because a prisoner came in,
mm-hmm.
in handcuffs. And get ushered in. And I said, yeah, because there's a prisoner.
Mm-hmm.
So even if it's a minor issue, you want that prisoner treated and go.
Yeah, to go out.
You don't want that person.
We do get prisoners coming in for very serious issues as mm-hmm. well. I remember having a patient who was a prisoner who had stage 4 gastric cancer, and he did have to take precedence over some other patients, even though he's a prisoner. You know, we took an oath. We have to treat everybody.
No, but the thing about it for me, it's always a high risk. I mean, at the end of the day, the prisoner comes in, you would like to deal with this person as quickly and mm-hmm. allow them to go, because you don't know what they were held up, what they're locked up for.
Mm-hmm.
What if there's a rapist? Was mm-hmm. a murderer? You don't know. And if that person happened to break free,
mm-hmm.
remember, they will kill you to get away.
Yeah.
They will injure you
to get away.
Yeah. So you
what I would say is that when they do come, they are properly escorted in the hospital, so which is a good thing.
So how come they still get away again?
I
read news.
I've not been privy to any of that. So.
But I know you all took an oath and you all treat with all, and I'm happy to hear that, mm-hmm. you know. Backing it up a little bit on the autoimmune diseases, you talk about rheumatoid arthritis and some of these things. Are these autoimmune diseases at all reversible?
So this is something that is lifelong.
Okay.
Unfortunately. And some people, like I said, some people just randomly develop it throughout life.
So it's not something hereditary?
It can be hereditary. Your mother could have had rheumatoid arthritis. Your father could have had a thyroid disease. It can be hereditary. Some of them are hereditary.
Mm-hmm.
But not everything that is hereditary means that you need to get it. Unless there's a very big genetic component that we can see. Yes, you have this gene, and
mm-hmm.
we have tested for this gene,
mm-hmm.
so therefore, more than likely, you will get it. And there are certain types of cancer, like I mentioned before, that are just like that.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, there's colon cancer. Young people in their 20s have to take out their entire colon because they have a certain disease.
What is your colon, though?
It's part of your large intestine.
Right, so how do you mean take it out?
They take out, so...
So when they take it out...
Right, so let me explain. So when people develop colon cancer, we usually see polyps, etc. in the colon, right? We see the cancer spreading, etc. There is a condition called familial adenomatous polyposis, right? FAP for short, FAP, right? And mm-hmm. if you are diagnosed with this... Because you have so much polyps in your colon, one is bound to be malignant.
Huh.
So there's 100% chance that you will develop colon cancer. So to prevent you getting colon cancer, you take out the colon. And these people live with what we call a stoma.
What is a stoma?
A stoma is an opening in the abdomen that basically takes... the waste products out of your gastrointestinal system into a bag instead of passing it around with a stoma.
So you no longer have to use the other entrance.
Mm-mm.
Exit. Right?
No. Exit. Yeah. So that
condemn?
Yes.
For life?
Mm-hmm.
And how often do you have to change this bag?
So some people will... More than likely, once it gets dirty, people do change it. People, especially if you've had it for a while, they do teach you how to take care of your stoma. They do teach you, because it is an opening. It's the inside coming out. I don't want to tell people to look it up, but
Don't do that. This is the Lunchtime Doctor. We're here to educate you guys, not scare you, but at the end of the day, these are very serious things and it happens. We have a visitor.
I saw Govin. Yeah.
I wonder if he has a stomach.
No, he does not have a stomach.
So the thing is, right, these type of diseases and situations people exist with.
Yes.
And I can't imagine. So there's a hole in your body at the side of you.
Yep.
So this bag is hanging.
Yeah. So the
screw?
There's a bag that okay, tapes onto your body.
We have real calls coming in. Let me pick a good afternoon. All right, call me back. Hello, good afternoon.
Good night, Mr. Boy. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Doctor. What you're telling me, as he said, your exit is no longer you. So you walk along with a bag and you attach this bag to that part you're referring to and you use that part that you're
doing. But so, okay, this is getting a little So it is getting a little bit complicated. What I would say is that when they're diagnosed with that type of genetic factors, the FAP disease, their entire colon comes out because of the fact that they have so much of this polyps, right?
Mm-hmm.
When people are diagnosed with colon cancer, it can either be on the right side, the left side of the colon.
Okay.
So that when we're diagnosing somebody without that FAP, it can be on different sides of the colon, right?
Okay.
So depending on where that part is, then you can do what we call a hemicolectomy, meaning you're only taking off half of the colon. Now, when you're taking off certain parts of the colon, yes, you can have a stoma, but there are different procedures that can be done as well. Some people have a reversal of the stoma where they can actually use their back passage. This is dependent on so many different things. So when you are going into surgery, so they were going into a whole surgical specialty here, that it gets very complicated.
No,
the surgeon has to know which part. That's why so many tests are done before.
Prior.
Yeah, that's why I call it. So if you want to know why we are sticking a camera up anywhere, this is why, because we need to tailor management. Are you going to have a stoma or are you going to be able to use your back passage? You know, I know the conversation is going all over, but it is information that you know.
I will be honest. Yeah. I mean, I rarely get to sit down on the show with you guys, but whenever I'm here, I have a moral responsibility to our listeners to try to bring the information as best as possible.
Yes.
And we may... Listeners, I want to really, don't feel we're going all over the place. Eh? We try to stick with the autoimmune. So you start bringing it back a little bit, right? But somewhere along in our dialogue, we thoroughly appreciate what the doc is explaining to us. Mm-hmm. I mean, it for me, it's like, I have a texter coming in here. Callers are wondering, you know, they're wondering, I mean, because...
These things are not very...
Common.
Yes, it's not common.
It's not a common thing. So there you go. But here's my final question on that stoma issue. Do you feel to defecate? Or is it that...
You're honestly, you know what? I cannot answer that question for you because that is a question that needs to be answered by a patient
who has
a stoma.
Understood.
Yes, colon cancer, we do see it very often. And yes, we do see people needing to have stomas, etc. And it is a different...
Well, hi, Davey. I had the experience of having a diverticulitis.
Yes, diverticulitis.
And did I get that correct?
Diverticulitis.
Well, I could really read, boy. I get the whole word. Had to be with a stoma in 2021 and 2022. I had it repaired. I had a bag, and there are quite a lot of persons having that.
Mm-hmm.
But thank God, I had it reversed, and today I'm okay once again. So there's a person that actually had an experience with a stoma.
Reversal.
And it was reversed.
Yes.
So they got back to the back passage.
Yes.
I want to ask that texter, thank you so much for sharing your experience. Were you getting an urge? Is there the urge to, or is it that you just check and see?
So what I would say is this. Remember, the urge comes from your intestines and your body needing to expel itself.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a possibility that they do get the urge to expel, but I cannot speak to the experience. Mm, it just passes out. It leaks out.
That okay, is, and it
yeah,
comes.
Yeah.
Well, but boy, I have so many questions.
There's so many. Mm-hmm. Like I do know somebody who's young and has had that specific disease that I'm talking about, and he does advocate for people with stomas and for people who have had colon cancer. So maybe one of these days I'll have him on the show. He is very young. He's a lawyer, and you know, he does tell his story. He is very vocal about it, and he's
bless his good heart.
Yes.
Bless. You need to bring him. I hope I'm on
definitely
that show to come and really be there with our conversation.
I will definitely bring him onto the show one of these days. It's something that we need to talk about, because we do have people who have stomas, and
they're in Trinidad. Yeah, that's the thing.
It is. I've never heard.
It's not common, but I've never heard of it before. So no. I truly appreciate the conversation today.
And you know, like for me as well, it's. To me, that is common knowledge because of the sphere of
that you exist in.
That I exist in. Mm-hmm. But it is good to know that people don't know these things. So now that I know, I can educate people more on certain topics.
Well, that would be brilliant of you, because at the end of the day, while we want to answer a lot of questions with you guys, sometimes information like this can also assist with you. You know? So if you're ever in a situation where you know of a family member that's going through it, you remember that you heard it on the Lunchtime Doctor, and that Dr. Brittany and Davey or Bass, who was ever on the show, would have talked about this. So you're a little more in an informed position. Mm-hmm. Somebody says, good afternoon, doctor. Is there any medicine for arthritis in knees, waist, and feet? Also cramps in the body. Thank you.
Well, what I would say is that yes, there are certain medications that you can use to help with pains. It does depend on the type of arthritis. So we did talk about osteoarthritis, where you have the loss of the joint space and you have erosion of the cartilage, etc. But what I would say is that certain medications to reverse it, there's nothing really to reverse that. When it gets to a point that it's severe, surgery is your best bet to help with your pain. But there are pain medications that people tend to take that gives them some relief. Of course, I can't call them on the air.
Yeah, yeah.
But what I would say about these over-the-counter medications is that you have to be extremely careful as well with taking
so
them.
The best advice would be see a doctor.
It will definitely be see a doctor, but also take into consideration if you just want to go and take your little medication over the counter, that these things have a limit.
Okay.
And they have a risk.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Yes.
Well, we're talking about arthritis there, right?
Yeah, we're talking.
Well, my whole body that's pain and thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
We know it's arthritis, right?
Mm-hmm. Well,
and I went by this doctor nearby.
Yeah.
When I explained to him, he kind of laughed. Eh? He said, partner, he all going on. You have to live with that until you're dead.
Really?
Yes.
Arthritis?
Yeah. He said that no operation, no medication, nothing. You go take it, go ease up the pain a little bit, but that is something you have to live with it until you're dead.
So,
thank you for sharing.
The color is completely right, because remember, if you have arthritis in quite a number of joints in your body, especially even things like osteoarthritis, you're not going to do a surgery for every single joint in your body. The only time you're going to really perform a surgery is that one joint. You are getting serious complication, for example, is it your knee or your hip? You know, if you're getting extremely, and that is the only time, because a lot of people who develop osteoarthritis are in their older years.
Okay.
And older people doing surgery for older people comes with
risk. Heavy risk.
Yes.
Somebody says, as we get set to close off for the TBC Radio Network here, hi, what are the early symptoms of colon cancer?
Right. So, the early symptoms would be things like passing blood in your stool. And remember, we did talk about the different types of blood. Now, if the blood is usually mixed in the stool, we say that is a sign. If you have changes in the stool, so if they become sort of pencil shaped, then that is a sign as well.
Wait, if your stool pencil shaped,
yes,
that is a sign of colon cancer.
That is a sign that maybe a tumor is suppressing the
The passageway.
Yeah.
Okay. So a polyp.
Yeah.
Or something.
Or any type of cancer. If it's growing. So the polyp itself is growing.
Something is there that...
That is actually shaping it in a different way.
Whoa.
If you are getting a lot of pain when you are passing stool, especially if you're seeing the blood in the stool as well,
mm-hmm.
that is another sign. Then, I mean, there are many other factors that we take into consideration, but most of the time when people come in for colon cancer, it is that blood in the stool.
Wow. Well, I thank this person for mm-hmm. sharing their images. I'm seeing some images, Doc. I'll probably show you off air.
The stoma.
Yeah,
I know what
it, you know. Okay, yeah, good. Yeah. Whatever.
it will look a little bit pink initially because it is coming out of the body. It is your insides coming out.
But what it says here, whenever you eat, your body processes the food and goes straight to the bag within 20 minutes.
Yes.
So you can open the bag and empty it.
Yes.
With no smell whatsoever. Mm-hmm. Every day you change the bag, if you have it, and have it cleaned. And mm-hmm. yes, quite a lot of persons have children
mm-hmm.
also. But I must say thanks to my medical team for bringing me back to normal.
Yeah, so we call that fluid effluent. So it just comes out of the body.
So it doesn't stay... Oh, okay. So this is the early stages of forming stool.
Yes.
More or less.
Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
so it's
that's
not,
as clean as we can put it.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Okay, okay. Wow, isn't the body wonderful?
It is. It is a wonderful thing. And it's... I know a lot of people initially when they find out that they have to have a stoma for the rest of their life, they feel like something is wrong with them, like they will be perceived a certain way or people will not take to them kindly. But at the end of the day, it is something that can also be life-saving, you know? It is life-saving in terms of things like colon cancer.
But then the hole in your body, the hole at the side of your body doesn't... Your body heals itself.
Yeah,
so
it
try to?
It.
So you have to, the doctors have to continue to... How do you keep that open? Because normally it will close up.
You do go and get it checked quite often. So I'm not too sure how often this person had to go. But usually from my experience in surgery, especially if it's a new stoma, we would try to check them every week.
But what about
and Vaseline,
infections?
Et cetera, we tell them.
How do they bathe? Because water can't get into that.
So they have bags to
cover.
Yeah. So the bag usually sticks onto the body
from
what I recall.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
This is the world of medicine, and it can be very scary.
It's very interesting. It is an interesting topic.
Guys, no doubt we will wrap the conversation here as we send our sister stations back to the regular programming. But I'll keep Doc a little bit longer. We'll chat. You know, this is my final day here with the doctor. Next week, Godspeed Alive, I'll be going back to the overdrive. Mm-hmm. Unless something spirals and happens, you know. So I would take this opportunity to say thank you. Of course, allow the sister stations to go back to their regular programming. And we'll take a break and we'll keep you here, but that's a little bit longer. So we can chat, you know, and get some more information because the phone lines are ringing. Persons are interested and they are calling.
Yes.
All right. So just about a minute and some seconds away before the top of the hour, we take a quick break. When we come back, we continue a little extended version of the Lunchtime Doctor. Just specially for you.
Expression is who we are. Take control.
The all-new Talk Radio.
Freedom 106.5.
Speak your mind.
Engage with Davey on the all-new Talk Radio. Freedom 106.5.
Once again, good afternoon, Trinidad and Tobago. For those of you who did not know, I shouldn't say Miss, but Dr. Brittany Dean is going to be leaving Trinidad and Tobago in about a month and something, and she's going to be heading to Poland. Yeah. And guess what? Miss Supranational. All right, she is Miss Supranational Trinidad and Tobago, and she is heading to Poland. Yeah, now it's always a pleasure when this lady walks into the studio and see the big host there on Sheffer. She, you know, it's always a pleasure, you know. And look at her, all smiles. Beautiful. Boss Lady, how are you? Yeah. I have a special song for Boss Lady, you know. Guess sing it some years ago when I was coming for this walk. Yeah, I have a song for the Boss Lady. But the thing about it is, Miss Dr. Brittany Dean is going to be representing us. And for those of you that missed that segment when we talked about it on Monday, because as she reached in the studio, I was, you know, we'll talk about it. Remind our listeners very, very quickly, what is this Miss Supranational?
So it is an international pageant. It's one of the big five pageants. So it's somewhat akin to Miss Universe and Miss World. We just don't know about it yet because it is a young pageant. But we will know about it very soon enough, because I will bring a little light to it in Trinidad, and I hope I will get a lot of support from our citizens.
Yeah, I'm getting it already. Bringing home the crown. So, in your journey going over to Poland there,
yes,
you know, what are you expecting? What's going to happen? Is it going to be treated like a Miss Universe, Miss World?
Yes, definitely.
So, what will happen when you get there? Have they rolled the itinerary for you?
So, we have not gotten the full itinerary yet, but there's a lot of training, there's a lot of sightseeing, there's so many different activities that we have to do with all the other countries as well. So it is somewhat like Miss Universe or Miss World, where we do have that 2 weeks of preparation before the final night in July. So it is going to be a fun one. It may be a little cold. I'm not used to to the European weather, but I think I will enjoy it.
Well, work here a little bit and you will get accustomed to it. Like, I don't know. Them fearless penguins working in this building.
Just come in every day and I don't feel cold. Tuska says she feels cold all the time.
You see, we come prepared. So if you want to get a little bit of the Polish atmosphere, you just come in here and spend a couple hours.
Well, maybe it's just because she's here for a good few hours, but I don't feel cold. I feel...
Come in here with some kind of office, I'd be like, well, what going on? This woman, boy, and we in here and Paul's raised and we going through the whole thing. We have a call on the line. Hello, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Is this lady the doctor who was on TV yesterday with Gerard Abiu?
Who?
On the morning show.
On the morning show?
That was Dr. Vishali.
That's Dr. Vishali, not a doctor.
But anyhow, I saw you once before. You're very beautiful and intelligent.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Who was once Miss Caribana?
Okay, that is so nice.
All right, thank you so much for calling. You know, I get those compliments now, so I will share it with you this afternoon.
I appreciate that.
So, folks, I think it's a wrap. We have Boss Lady in studio. We have something. We can take a nice picture with you, you know.
Yeah,
she make you walk with your crown. Yeah, we're going. She probably want to try it on. But you look nice with it.
Yes, sure.
I think we should nominate our boss to go up next year.
Oh, Miss Universe.
Or Miss Supranational.
Miss Universe.
Miss Universe. With this universe. Govind, we should hold an internal competition here. TBC Radio Network, Finest Women. And, you know, Tova, we're putting you up there. We're pushing you up there, man. We have a few of them here. We push you up there. So the thing is, we extend congratulations to you. I mean, I saw the video. You in this weightlifting thing. And then I just be watching in the studio and you don't look like you just lift anything. And you're bench pressing more than me and Govind combined. Govind, you can lift weights. I just watch people lift weights.
It's not in the muscles, you know. It doesn't have to be big. It's
Brittany,
just
you have muscles?
Yes, I have.
I have a
little bit.
You have a little something
a little
there.
Something.
The best insight, instant feedback, accountability. The all-new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5.